Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you for joining us. Frontlines of Freedom is a proud partner with AmVets. We both promote our nation and our veterans. Co-host Air Force vet Josh Lang looks happy. You and Roland and I spent last Tuesday at the Michigan Association of Broadcasters Awards Banquet. We came home with some hardware. That was fun, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, Colonel. Frontlines of Freedom came home with awards in the categories of Regularly Scheduled Weekend Broadcast Personality or Team and Special Show for a Weekend Broadcast Personality or Team. It was an enjoyable evening hanging out with you, Roland, and many of the team members from our flagship station, Wood Radio, which took home Station of the Year once again.
Thanks, Josh. We'll hear from Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby at Weapon of the Week, and Marine Vet Skip Coriel is here looking smug and healthy. Are you done teaching college this semester?
Yeah, Colonel, I am. Just got done this past week. As you know, I teach writing at Cornerstone University, which is ironic because some people think that Marines can't read or write, and that's just not true most of the time.
You know, you learn something every day. I just did.
That's right.
Here's what we have for you today. On News and Comment by the Colonel, I'm going to suggest that the UN and media's focus on civilian casualties caused by U.S. military forces in the Middle East seems to be forgetting all about the casualties caused by ISIS and other terrorists and Russia and Syria and Iran and those folks who don't really care about civilian casualties. Our main interview for today is with the Farmer Veteran Coalition. These folks help veterans become farmers. They are amazing people. You're going to love this. Dr. Zudi Jasser is an American patriot and a Muslim, and we're going to discuss what we non-Muslims should expect from American Muslims. Then we'll meet Air Force Academy grad Mike Schober and discuss his very interesting new book, The Accidental Free Society. Then Skip and I will discuss how safe the world is, according to our president, thanks to our deal with Iran.
Hey, troops, invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then also go to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We welcome your input to this show, troops. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or do it on Facebook. Now it's time for News and Comment by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. First, the news. What's first, Josh?
The Navy SEAL killed by ISIS during an extremely heavy, extremely intense firefight with U.S. Special Forces and Kurdish Peshmerga troops in northern Iraq last week was Charlie Keating IV. Keating was advising Peshmerga forces, but was less than 2 miles behind the front lines in the town of Tel Escuf. Pentagon Press Secretary Peter Cook said, quote, "The Peshmerga were trying to hold the line, but Navy SEALs, at least 20, came in and pounded the out of ISIS." End quote. Military trainer Matthew Van Dyke told Fox News, saying that scores of Islamic State militants died. Van Dyke and 3 U.S. veterans were training Assyrian Christian forces battling ISIS in the region. Van Dyke added, quote, "ISIS kept sending in suicide bombers. SEALs pounded them, and the U.S. airstrikes did a lot of help. Bullets flying everywhere, machine gun fire from ISIS, really intense firefight." End quote. Navy SEALs joined what would become a 14-hour firefight roughly an hour after it started. Van Dyke called their actions heroic in beating back ISIS, where at least 60 of the Islamic State militants were killed. He said the SEALs kept fighting until ammunition ran low.
We all mourn the death of Navy SEAL Charlie Keating. He died serving his nation, but his nation wasn't serving him. If that fight was really important, why didn't we have hundreds of combat troops there to ensure victory? This battle is just part of the game that Washington is playing. Rest in peace, Charlie Keating.
According to a well-informed Israeli website, British special forces were ambushed by ISIS suicide bombers in Libya. The attack is said to have happened late last month and reportedly killed or wounded Italian troops who were traveling in a convoy with Britain's Special Boat Service personnel, who apparently escaped uninjured. The Debka News website said vehicles packed with explosives drew up alongside the convoy transporting the Italian and British troops and blew themselves up. Other ISIS fighters shelled the convoy with mortars and strafed it with heavy machine gun fire. The Western force was only able to escape after Italian and French warplanes and attack helicopters intervened. British Special Forces personnel have reportedly been on the ground in Libya for months, and Foreign Secretary Philip Hammond has signaled that other troops could be sent to shore up the country's fragile military in the fight against ISIS. Militants have seized control of strategic points along the Libyan coast over the past year. The UK is said to be considering deploying up to 1,000 personnel as part of a 6,000-strong Italian-led peacekeeping operation. Last week, Mr. Hammond warned that ISIS wants to turn Libya into a bolt hole from which to launch attacks on mainland Europe.
Libya is a mess. It has been ever since our president led the charge to throw out their previous dictator. But apparently no one thought about what would happen to Libya then. The answer is ISIS.
China recently denied a request from the United States for a port visit in Hong Kong by the USS John C. Stennis Aircraft Carrier Group, in an apparent sign of mounting tensions in the disputed South China Sea. Defense Secretary Ash Carter and his Philippine counterpart visited the Stennis in those waters 2 weeks ago, a move that irked Beijing. Gabrielle Price, spokeswoman for East Asia, said the department was recently informed that a request for a visit by the Stennis and accompanying vessels was denied. She said the U.S. has a long record of successful port visits to Hong Kong, including a current visit by the USS Blue Ridge, and it expects that will continue. She referred further inquiries to the Chinese government. The Chinese embassy in Washington did not immediately respond to a request for comment. The Hong Kong-based South China Morning Post quoted China's foreign ministry as saying that port calls by U.S. warships are examined on a case-by-case basis.
China now has nuclear-tipped missiles that can strike our nation, and they're building their military. They properly see us as an adversary, and they also see that our military is growing weaker and weaker. So of course they're going to push us, because they know that we are all talk and no action.
One of the first female soldiers to earn the coveted Ranger tab last summer has now become the Army's first woman in the infantry. Captain Kristen Griest, a West Point graduate who last August completed several grueling months of Ranger school, was approved to transfer from the Army's military police branch into the infantry. Captain Griest is attending the Maneuver Captain's Career Course at Fort Benning, Georgia, which physically and mentally prepares infantry and armor officers to command frontline fighting companies. Bob Perdeman, spokesman for the Maneuver Center of Excellence at Fort Benning, said, quote, "Like any other officer wishing to branch transfer, Captain Griest applied for an exception to Army policy to transfer from military police to infantry. Her transfer was approved by the Department of the Army on April 25, and she is now an infantry officer." Griest, 27 years old from Orange, Connecticut, had served as a military police officer and had a deployment to Afghanistan since graduating from West Point in 2011. The Army last month approved 21 female West Point and ROTC cadets and an officer candidate school student to commission into the infantry and armor branches in the coming months. 9 aim to serve in the infantry, and 13 hope to serve as armor officers. Those future officers must first complete months of job-specific training and meet a series of physical requirements before they're assigned to a unit to serve as platoon leaders. Griest, who was not made available for interviews, told reporters in August that she hoped to serve in the Army's Special Forces. Special Forces training and the elite 75th Ranger Regiment are now officially open to female soldiers, though it will be some time before a woman serves in those special operations positions. A spokesman added that it will likely be well over a year before a woman serves in the Rangers or Green Berets.
I am sure that Captain Griest will do a fine job as an infantry officer. She is clearly a committed soldier and in top physical shape. I feel certain that she wants to do what is best for our nation and our Army. However, she's leading the charge to the end of real combat readiness for our close combat forces. My comments for the last 4 weeks have explained the real facts of this matter. And that's the news. Friends, I'm amazed at how hard AmVets works to support our military, our veterans, and their families. AmVets Healing Heroes program assists veterans with travel costs so they can spend time at their veterans' bedside or just be with them as they recuperate. Go to amvets.org for further information on this wonderful program. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Frontlines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel and we'll be wowed by the Weapon of the Week. Then we'll learn about the Farmer Veteran Coalition It's a nationwide group with a wonderful impact on our nation and our vets. At ease, troops, take a break.
When I adopted her, she was a mess. Scabs, itching, licking, missing fur, hot spots, a thin, dull coat. So I take the dog to the vet for the standard run-of-the-mill tests and treatments. No results. I hear your advertisement on the radio.
DINOVITE .com.
859-428-1000.
So I get the 5-pound box of Dynavite and the Lico chops within a 4-week total. Instead of a German Shedder, I have a German Shepherd. Sheba is 105 lean pounds of shiny, smooth, happy dog for life because she gets fed Dynavite. And the results, they're just incredibly outstanding. And she loves it. When you rescue a dog, you have to do the right thing. You've got to feed them right for life. Do the Dynavite. Dynavite for life.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE .com.
If you're a veteran looking to file for your service-connected benefits through the Department of Veterans Affairs, don't go it alone. AmVet's highly trained service officers stand ready to walk you through the process at VA regional offices around the country. AmVet's can offer you the advice you need to finally receive all your earned benefits. In 2009 alone, AmVet's helped process more than 65,000 claims and appeals, securing more than $410 million in benefits. To find your nearest AmVet service officer or to learn more, visit AmVets.org.
This is Colonel Danny Gillen. It's 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the Front Lines of Freedom all across America. A Front Lines of Freedom salute to one of our show's sponsors, Van Dyke Mortgage. They're not a mortgage broker. They're a mortgage bank, and that's a big plus for you. They take great care of everyone, especially vets. Check VanDykeMortgage.com. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. There's been a lot in the news in the last months about the civilian casualties in the Mideast that our forces, especially our air forces, are causing. Now, I really don't like to hear that civilians have been killed, ever, or anywhere, but especially by our military forces. Indeed, unless a military is conducting combat, or a law enforcement team is dealing with crime, or an individual is engaged in self-defense, I don't like to hear of any human being being killed. That said, the purpose of conducting war is to kill people and break things. If our military is committed to fight by our White House and the Pentagon, they're supposed to kill people. They should also have a clear goal, which they don't have, and our nation's focus should be on getting the job done and getting our troops home healthy and whole, which apparently is not our goal. Given the nature of this so-called war we're in now, where the enemy normally doesn't wear uniforms, often hides behind women and children, and in schools and hospitals and churches and mosques, really, how is anyone supposed to tell the difference? In most cases, our nation's rules of engagement, or ROE, require that our troops have to wait until they're fired upon before they can fire at an enemy. That's just plain stupid. When our troops spot a suspected enemy, they should light him up, not put themselves at risk until and if the bad guy shoots first. Why in the world do our brave men and women find themselves having every lethal act they take overlooked by lawyers? That's certainly not how effective war is waged. Why are they being judged for killing someone who claimed to be a civilian, who just maybe was a bad guy, or who should have been in the uniform of his own country defending his own nation so we wouldn't have to? By the way, how do you tell a civilian from an enemy? And why should our troops find their combat decisions being judged while the young men of that nation are fleeing to Europe and the United States? By the way, how does our nation ensure that none of the so-called refugees who want to come to our nation are really enemies who want to come here and kill us? If our troops can't tell for sure on the ground in the Middle East, how do our immigration people tell? Answer, they can't tell. This is all political. We will be admitting terrorists to our nation. So to get back to the point, in combat, a major goal of any force is to inflict casualties on the enemy while minimizing friendly casualties. If our troops never intentionally target either clearly civilian or clearly non-combat persons or places, then that's good enough. Yes, mistakes will be made, but I want our troops to be able to do all the preparatory fire they feel they need before advancing. if we're in a nation fighting bad guys and there are civilians around the bad guys, then the civilians better either take out the bad guys themselves or move. And if a hospital gets hit, that's not good. I'm sorry, but this is war. And by the way, have you noticed that the media never mentions the damage done to people and places by ISIS or other terrorists? I wonder why. Maybe someone should ask them why. However, the media is focusing on the recent doubling of previous estimates of civilian casualties killed by the U.S. in our wimpy air war against ISIS. You see, the U.S. has confirmed that 20 more non-combatants died and 11 were injured in 9 separate incidents between September 2015 and February 2016. Among those likely killed were 2 Iraqi families. On October 5th, U.S. aircraft targeted an ISIL mortar position in the village of Eshtashana, and CENTCOM now admits that 8 civilians were killed. According to an earlier UN report, all of the dead came from one family, that of a village elder. And on December 12, 2015, in Ramadi, 5 members of a family, including 3 children, died when U.S. aircraft struck an ISIL checkpoint. CENTCOM says that 5 civilians were killed after they unexpectedly moved into the target location after weapons were already in flight. 9 new civilian casualty events have been reported in total, bringing to 25 the number of cases so far admitted. A total of 41 civilian deaths and 28 injuries have now been conceded by the United States. That compares with 406 alleged coalition civilian casualty events since strikes began in April 2014. The media suggests that an additional 1,500 civilians may have been killed. The media has not been watching the thousands of Russian airstrikes at all. And there have been Chinese airstrikes, too. Again, I'm not saying the civilian deaths are okay. They're not. Ever wonder how many civilians were killed by the terrorists? If this wasn't a big deal, then why are we fighting over there? Bottom line, our nation's attitude toward civilian casualties should be that we don't do it on purpose and we're sorry. End of issue. When the media brings up more questions, tell them to come back when the terrorists, Russians, Syrians, Iranians, and others out there fighting have been asked the same questions and answered them. This is war. In this election year, this is a good time to ask wannabe commanders-in-chief and members of Congress what they're going to do to end this insulting of our troops and what they're going to do about the failure by Washington to put the safety of our troops first. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. Let's do WOW now. WOW, the weapon of the week. And our man of WOW is Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What you got this week, Roland?
Colonel, the U.S. military needs a new messaging technology that's ultra-secure and will self-destruct. Does that sound familiar? Think of a company called Snapchat. That's an important part of what the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA, is aiming to do via a request for proposals from the DoD website. In phase 3 of this project, DARPA says it requires, quote, a secure messaging system that can provide one-time eyes-only messages. And of course, with a lot of other things. The commercial messaging platform Snapchat allows a message to be viewed for a short length of time, like 1 to 10 seconds, before it becomes inaccessible. This is the primary reason it's become such a popular messaging platform. Beyond this, the larger objective for the military is to meet a critical DoD need to develop a secure messaging and transaction platform. The DARPA request for proposals is aimed at building a messaging platform that the military could use for secure communications, ranging from procurement all the way to intelligence. To prevent cyber attacks and to build a more secure platform, DARPA's IANA messaging service that not only taps the standard encryption that's used by many other messaging services, but also communicates via a decentralized protocol called blockchain, which would allow messages and transactions to be distributed but not kept in a central location. This would make hacking very difficult and immediately detectable. This is a fantastic move by DARPA, and it will pave the road for many entrepreneurs to be able to roll up their sleeves and get started in this market. And blockchain can have a lot of military uses. For example, the secure messaging services would let people in the field communicate with others without going through a command and control center. One key element of DARPA's request for proposals addresses the need of troops on the ground in denied communication environments. they would have a way to securely communicate back to headquarters and the Department of Defense that is safe from hackers. However, there is a question mark over whether blockchain technology will be scalable enough for the military, which has vast communication networks. Roger Kay, president of the tech research firm Endpoint Technologies, says the problem is that there's a lot of delay in the blockchain system. Even if DARPA's new blockchain-based messaging system does not materialize, aspects of the technology could find their way into other projects. DARPA funds a lot of forward-thinking projects, and even if the deliverables are not immediately usable, the knowledge gain rolls into the next thing, which rolls into the next thing, which rolls into the next really big thing. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Roland, you're incredible. I really appreciate you, dude. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we're going to learn about an amazing group, the Farmer Veterans Coalition. This will surprise you. Then my friend Zudi Jasser, an American patriot and Muslim, will join us. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You are standing tall with the Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Get a couple of 50-pound weights and do a couple of dozen curls while you jog in place. Then stand at ease.
FHA loans still work when others might not. This is Charlie Sundstrom with your Van Dyke Mortgage Minute. Here are a few of the beneficial features to an FHA loan. First, low down payments. As little as 3.5% down will work in most instances, and 5% covers most others. Higher loan amounts. In some areas, FHA maximums can exceed conventional loan limits. Lower total cash to close. Sellers can help pay closing costs, and borrowers can receive gift money toward their down payments. The FHA program continues to evolve and is a good option if your needs and situation preclude you from qualifying for a conventional loan. At Van Dyke Mortgage, we work hard to be your trusted mortgage advisor and can help analyze your personal situation and give you advice that matters. For your mortgage pre-approval and refi needs, start by visiting vandykemortgage.com.
Corporate NMLS 3035. Van Dyke Mortgage is an equal housing lender. Charlie Sundstrom, NMLS 134251.
Troops, welcome back to your very favorite military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. I really do enjoy your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. The Farmer Veteran Coalition is a national organization with an amazing mission statement. Here's what it says. Quote, we cultivate a new generation of farmers and food leaders and develop viable employment and meaningful careers through the collaboration of the farming and military communities. We believe that veterans possess unique skills and character needed to strengthen rural communities and create sustainable food systems. We believe that agriculture offers purpose, opportunity, and physical and psychological benefits. End quote. All I can say is, wow. Joining us now is their founder and CEO, Michael O'Gorman. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom, Michael.
Thank you, Denny, and thank you to all your listeners for listening in to us.
Well, this is amazing. Now, Michael, you're not a veteran, are you?
No, I'm not. It's partly why I named it the Farmer Veteran Coalition, since we'd be a coalition of farmers and veterans. But I began this project in 2008, and I was partly inspired by my 100-year-old father, who passed away last week as our oldest farmer veteran in our program, a World War II veteran. And on 9/11, my oldest daughter, the oldest of my four children, was at Ground Zero and physically unhurt, you know, went through a lot of the same experience of trauma that men and women have and at war. And my son joined the military within a few days of that and had two deployments in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom and the global war on terror.
So you are a military family member by any way you strengthen it. Now you
absolutely. Now,
I presume you're a farmer by you grew up in it. That's what your family's been doing.
My father struggled with it and mostly taught school. He was at the original concept of, coming home from World War II and, looked for a piece of land and a place to raise the family, surrounded by, you know, nature and peace and tranquility. And, always preach that. My brother farms that land. I spent just about 40 years in production agriculture, and my claim to fame is I managed the production for three of the nation's largest organic vegetable operations. So I had a very significant and meaningful 40-year career in agriculture before starting this project.
So it's fair to say that you understand farming a little bit.
And as much as anybody can.
Yeah, nobody's perfect at anything.
Yeah.
So what gave you the vision? Where did it come from to create the Farmer Veteran Coalition? I am so in awe of your mission statement. How did that happen?
Well, it's a couple things, Danny, that all came together. And in 2006, I was winding down an 11-year stint I did in managing a very large operation in Mexico to grow organic produce to send into the U.S. That was hired by an American company, obviously, to go down and put that together. And I was kind of looking for what's my next move. I did 40 years. I'd managed six different farms. And where am I going to go? And a study came out from the University of New Hampshire, the Carsey Institute, a think tank. And they did a very simple study. Some people say the numbers aren't exactly scientific, but they studied the zip codes of the killed in action that, unfortunately, in the years prior to 2006 were many in both Iraq and Afghanistan. And they found that there was this hugely disproportionate number of men and women coming from our most rural communities around the country. And so a light bulb went off, and I thought, let's do something about, you know, they're coming back to our farm communities and nobody's doing anything to help them come back to our farm communities. We did a little research and we found there were 40,000 groups in the United States that had the name veteran in it. They were there to help veterans and a much better situation than in previous wars, but none of them were targeting agriculture. None of them had this focus where the veterans were coming home to and what's going to be there when they show up at, you know, some rural route. And so light bulbs went off. I organized a meeting of fellow farmers in California and put an ad in the paper, say we were going to meet and try to see what farmers could offer jobs for veterans on their farms. And unbeknownst to us, three separate women read the article in the paper and came to the meeting, and who had all lost their son in combat in the previous year in both either Iraq or Afghanistan, including Mary Kilman, whose son was the most famous soldier to die in Afghanistan, the football player Pat Tillman.
Yes.
And so I just thought, boy, there's something that I just came up with this idea, and it just immediately lit the prairie on fire. There was something that was attracted to this idea that felt both healing off something, offering a good offering to the veterans, but also a really nice healing thing that everybody in the country could get behind.
Well, certainly something happened right. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're discussing the Farmer Veteran Coalition with their founder and CEO, Michael O'Gorman. So if I had been one of the people at that meeting or at a future meeting, and I was not a farmer, but I was a veteran and I wasn't sure what to do with my life, what would you do? What would happen?
Well, it took me I had to leave my day job. You know, farming's a 70, 80 hour a week job. So I left my day job the next year and said, I'm going to take a stab at trying to put something together that's never been, that didn't exist before. You know, a connection between these two giant parts of our economy and our world and the people that exist. You know, less than 1% now serve in the military, less than 1% now feed the nation. And so the intersection, the people that intersect in those two, and how can we support those who come home and are driven by that sense of service and want to see and find that in agriculture and feeding our nation. And so I was creating something that wasn't there before, and it's taken a while. At the end of the first year, I had found nine veterans. Every time I heard of one that was interested in farming, I'd drive as far as I had to go meet them and talk to them. And we now have a network of 7,500 veteran members in all 50 states, and we get more than 300 new ones a month. So it's actually an idea that's caught fire.
Well, clearly. And talk to me about somebody who shows up with some interest. What kind of guidance do you give them?
Well, we have a great staff here. That's the wonderful thing is many groups have reached out, liked our idea, supported us financially, allowed us to be able to put together a good team here. So we have about 14 people working in our office in Davis, California. The majority of them are veterans, and many of them are veterans of the post 9/11 service, and a large number, if not most of them, also have some backgrounds in agriculture and grew up around and familiarity with agriculture. So we urge veterans to contact us through the website, www.farmvetco, which is short for Farm Your Veteran Coalition, farmvetco.org. Yeah, and have someone walk them through the process, the simple process of becoming a member. And immediately, we're going to have a launch a new chapter in our membership process in just a matter of weeks. And membership cards will now be issued, and we'll give discounts, at significant discounts, at a large number of agricultural suppliers. But we can help connect people to what benefits are out there, what USDA programs they might be able to tap into. We have a small grants program that's given out awarded a number of grants. I think Michigan had the highest number of applicants this year because of our very active chapter we have there, but we give out small grants. We bought a well for somebody starting their farm there last year, and beekeeping equipment and farm equipment and things that we purchase from third-party vendors.
You know, there's clearly more to discuss on this, and Michael's going to stay with us as we continue to talk about helping vets become farmers. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, you have time for 76 sit-ups. Nice and slow, very slow. Slower you go, the better it is for you. Then rehydrate with water, nothing with caffeine. Take a break or stay in the area. We'll be right back.
If you're looking for a way to show your support to our military men and women serving in harm's way, then donate new or used DVDs to AMVET's Task Force DVD today. Since 2006, Task Force DVD has provided millions of hours of entertainment to troops serving on the front lines free of charge. Through your cash or DVD contributions, you can share a little piece of home with our heroes serving around the world. To learn more about Task Force DVD, visit AMVETS.org.
This is Colonel Denny Gilliam. We're at the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Michael O'Gorman, the CEO and founder of the Farmer Veteran Coalition. Michael, as I read your website, your guiding principle is that we guide the passion of our veterans so that they may earn for themselves a meaningful, financially sustainable place in the agricultural community. This could entail full or part-time employment or a critical supplement to disability-related income. This sounds wonderful. I mean, you guys seem to have touched all the right bases. Talk to me specifically about what you would do to a veteran who showed up who was not a farmer, who didn't have a background in farming, but was interested.
Well, that's the important thing, Denny, to understand, that when one grows up in farming, you're learning about farming before you're out of diapers. It's really it's every discussion at the dinner table. It's something that there's so much knowledge gained. And so it takes a lot of catch up for someone to want to go farm for the first time. So we really do everything we can to first see if the veteran would be interested in employment. There's a lot of really exciting careers in agriculture that don't involve farming on your own, that you can work for somebody. You know, there's a lot of public support now for farmers and small farmers and people going into agriculture, but it's not realistic for everybody. So we try to give everybody a little taste of realism and a little taste of some of the options that actually could be what we call farming with an income, and help out when we can do that. It's also good to get adequate training. And so fortunately, there's programs all around the country when they can, if the veteran can use their post 9/11 GI Bill to get some of that training and support their family when they're getting that training. If we can steer them to catch them early enough in their path out of the military, that the education they go after and the training they go after, that we could have them look at agriculture and get enough of that before they go on their career, then that really helps.
That really makes sense, because I'm not a farmer, but one thing I do know is farming is work. And if you're not looking for work, you're in the wrong place, right?
Absolutely. And the one thing we do find, Denny, is that, well, the majority of veterans that come to us aren't necessarily direct heirs to a family farm. The majority of them are from rural America. They grew up in rural America, and their uncle was a farmer. Their grandfather was a farmer. Their neighbor was a farmer. They bucked hay in the summer. They cleaned out the barn stalls. You know, they did the farm chores. And so they know what they're getting into. And anybody in the military that's choosing a farming career, you know, knows what hard work is, and, you know, inclement weather and long hours. And so we think that's a good fit.
For the most part, do you find this very successful?
Yes, that's the surprising thing. I think that we have an extreme success rate. The numbers of the veterans that work with us that we've helped through our fellowship fund over the years, and we've gone back and seen, you know, 5 years, 6 years later, are they still farming? What are they doing? You know, and we're finding that, yes, they are, with real high numbers, you know, 80 to 90% from year to year are sticking with it. And like I said, many farmers in the country, the majority of the farmers have combined what we call on-farm and off-farm income. A lot of our veterans don't have large parcels of land or necessarily a farm large enough to be the entire income for their family. But they are growing their farm operations, and many of them will grow it into a full-time thing.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're discussing the Farmer Veteran Coalition with Michael O'Gorman. So what you're seeing is success, because if somebody is successful by whatever their standards are, they're part-time, full-time, working for somebody else, self-employed, whatever, their life's established. We have the meaning to life and the things that some people don't end up with when they come out of the service. So you're batting really high. That sounds really successful, and it's got to give you a lot of great satisfaction.
Well, it is satisfying. It's satisfying to see that this whole concept is really taken off, and that we're not the only group doing this now. You know, we are the only national one, and we get along great with everyone else that's working in this area. And so that's really great to see. But the number of veterans who are interested in agriculture, the recognition they're now getting from the USDA, you know, when President Obama signed the most recent farm bill in 2014 in Michigan, the White House invited me out there for it because it, for the first time ever, recognized military veterans as a sector of the farming population and created benefits and programs specific for them. So we're really excited about that. And we're excited about the number of veterans all over the country who now passed 500 that are using the Homegrown by Heroes label to promote the sale of their products and to let their customers know that they served in the armed forces of the United States.
So that's your sort of logo, Homegrown by Heroes, that goes on products that your members?
Any farmer, rancher, or fisherman of any military era, as long as they served honorably and are general discharged from the armed service, and they produce and they're 50% or owner or greater owner of the operation that produces the food, they could use this as a second label. It's very similar to like certified organic. We certify them. It's the label is was started by Kentucky Department of Agriculture, and they licensed us to manage it in the other 49 states, and it's really catching on. We have the growers in the project as of now have $500 million in annual sales, and it's something that's really growing.
Michael, this is amazing. And you're in all 50 states. And folks, if you didn't catch it the first time, it's farmervetco.org. And I would presume, Michael, that anybody can plug into farmervetco.org and get plugged into whatever chapter is nearer them in their state or whatever state they're interested in working in.
Absolutely. We can, veterans, interestingly, when I go out and speak, I'm asked as often what they can do to help us as, what we can do to help them. It's just their nature. And so, they can get plugged in both ways and, through the website and by talking to the team here.
You know, you're right. I didn't even think about this till you brought it up. There's so much in common between the culture of the military and of farmers. They're hardworking. They're team people. They help each other. You sure came up with a winner. Michael, thank you so much for taking time to join us today. I really appreciate you. We're going to have to stay in touch because I have a feeling that I'm going to want to continue to promote Farmer Veteran Coalition. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Danny. Thank you so much.
Now it's time for the AMVET's Stand Tall Troop Report. This is when we find an outstanding performance of duty and we get to honor this fine troop. Well, Master Sergeant Jesse Yandell recently retired from active duty at Fort Jackson, South Carolina. A former 2nd Ranger Battalion 1st Sergeant, Yandell's career leading Rangers is far from over. Yandell now serves in an advisory role with American Dream U, a veteran transition not-for-profit with a mission of assisting service members and their families as they transition out of the military. Randall is currently assisting 8 active duty Rangers in their transition to civilian careers and educational opportunities to include enrollment in top flight veteran programs such as Stanford Ignite. Jesse's transition from a selfless military career spent almost entirely in special operations to the civilian marketplace serves as an example for all who will follow him, said Brian Boyer, president of Boyer Construction. His focus, commitment, and values based on decision-making in a private sector role is no different than when he was leading Rangers in combat. I applaud his efforts aimed at helping fellow veterans transition into the private sector, Boyer said. So stand tall, Ranger Jesse Yandell. Thank you that you're still serving our nation. Frontlines of Freedom and all our AMVETs salute you. This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking with Dr. Zudi Jasser, a veteran of the U.S. Navy and a patriotic Muslim. Then Mike Schober will share about his book, The Accidental Free Society, It's a Challenge to Care for Our Nation. And then Skip Coriel and I will discuss our president's recent comment that the Iran deal has made the world a safer place. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our Armed America report. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, do some wind sprints for a couple of miles, then grab some protein and rehydrate with water, then put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or Facebook.
This report is brought to you by Capital One. According to the Capital One Rewards Barometer, nearly 1 in 4 rewards cardholders say it's difficult to determine the value of their earnings. Our lives are busy enough. Do you really want a credit card that makes things more complicated? Instead, look for a straightforward card that makes life easier and saves money. Then you'll have time to enjoy its benefits. Capital One has your back, with products and tools that work together to create an effortless experience. For instance, the Quicksilver card from Capital One has a flat 1.5% earn rate with no limits or expiration dates and no foreign transaction fees. It's easy to use and comes with additional perks like the Capital One wallet that makes it easy to stay organized on the go. And Second Look, which proactively flags potentially mistaken or unexpected charges. Don't complicate your life. Instead, find a card that makes it easier. For more information on Quicksilver and other Capital One products and tools, visit www.capitalone.com. That's www.capitalone.com. I'm Cecilia Filguera.
If you served honorably in our nation's armed forces and you're looking for a way to continue serving your fellow veterans in your community, then join AMVETS. Each year, AMVETS members volunteer millions of hours at VA healthcare facilities from coast to coast. AMVETS posts and departments also participate in a wide variety of community service projects ranging from Americanism in our schools to supporting the Special Olympics and Boy Scouts of America. If you no longer wear the uniform today, you can still serve through the AMVETS by joining today at AMVETS.org.